Blog Talk Radio.
An old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. He tells the grandson, "A fight is going on inside me, and this is a terrible fight. You see, this fight is between two wolves. One wolf is evil. It is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, full of arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority. It lies with false pride, superiority, and ego." He continues, "The other wolf is good. This wolf is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, full of humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith." Now, this same fight is going on inside you and inside every other person too. The grandson, he thought about it, looked up, asked his grandfather, "Well, which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "It's the wolf you feed."
Yeah.
Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. It all just depends on what part of the world you are listening. Bienvenidos, K-Tal. Namaste, O-Ki, and welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosts and duties, live every Monday, Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, here on blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseeffect, the letter FX, holding down the other half of our host and duty. Some call him the Lion's Historian. Others call him Unc. I just simply call him my best friend because he's my dad, Bill Green. What's happening, Daddy-O? How you doing tonight?
Still too early to tell. What's up, Wilfredo?
Right on. Yeah, it's a little early to tell, man.
I shouldn't say that. Maybe it's not as early. You know, maybe it's later than I think. In fact, I came. I had a doctor's appointment today, and the results were less than favorable. You know, but you know, I'm getting close to being included on the endangered species list. So that's causing a little bit of concern. You know, but you know, I always love it when she gives me all of the results of my tests, especially the blood tests, and when she lets me know the different levels and certain things, you know, like my glucose, hemoglobin, whatever it is, I have to go back to the portal to figure it out. Whatever it is that gives you your level of sugar in your blood, you know, she said that it's at a range of concern, that it should be 6.6. is 6.8, which indicates type 2 diabetes, you know. So, of course, you know, my eyes didn't really buck out that much because there's a history of it, but not knowing details, levels, and, you know, measurements, just hearing type 2 diabetes, you know, like, oh, shit, excuse my language.
No,
and,
man, yeah.
And she said, but. You know, man, sometimes I love that word, but it's a strange word, right? Sometimes, even though it suggests disagreement, sometimes it can have some positive connotations. She said, but although this sounds contradictory, for a person your age, and that's my point, I love it when I hear my doc says, for a person your age, it's almost always going to come out positive. So she said, but although this sounds contradictory, for a person your age, which, you know, as you all know by now, I'm 75, she said the acceptable level is 8.0. She said, however, you know, and that's the other one that, although it can sound positive, can also have negative connotations. She said, the level's gone up. It hasn't gone down. And from where it was to where it is now, which where it was last year was normal, she said, we need to reverse that direction. So, you know, so... You know, it's maybe not too early to tell. Maybe, you know, and it's not too late to do something about it. You know, maybe it's not all bad, you know. So maybe that's a better way to answer, you know. Yeah. How am I doing? Hey, it's not all bad.
It's not all bad. I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Good. Glad to hear, you know, it seems like, I know it wasn't as favorable as you wanted, but still, we're a man your age, right? But
and that's the thing, you know, and that's what I want to write a book on, you know, and I keep forgetting the title. I told your cousin Ray the title, and it eludes me at this moment. But that whole thing of aging, you know, and why I talk to you, why you all, you know, and I'm sure I drive you crazy always talking about, you know, my age as it relates to whatever our conversations are. It's because nobody left me a manual. You know, and now all of, except for Aunt Edith, who's 107, you know, who really should come out with a book on aging, you know, but she's been interviewed by everybody because, you know, she's a centurion, and that's right. Always an interesting interview. Anyway, other than her, although she's aunt by marriage and not by blood, but after a while you can't tell the difference anyway in most families. Other than her, you know, all our aunts and uncles have kind of gone the way, mothers and fathers have gone the way to Buffalo. You know, so my cousins and I are like, you know, we're racing to the top of the food chart. And so I want to make note of these things, you know, because there is a reflective consideration in growing old. There's a commercial on TV I absolutely abhor. As a matter of fact, I'm glad. I wish I was rich so I could throw a shoe at the TV screen every time this chick comes on. It's going to buy me another damn TV, you know. Right. But since I ain't rich, I just look for the – where's the override? I look for the mute, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it's an Ensure commercial or something like that. And she starts out by saying, age is just a number, and mine is unlisted. Well, that sounds real cute. But first of all, age is more than a number. It's a record. And in that record, there are notes, and in those notes are sometimes recognitions of certain shifts, you know, as we get older. And the other thing is, you know, my and my number's not listed. Well, God got her number, you know, and one day he's going to be calling. You know, so anyway, that's it. Yeah, so let me get out the way so you can do your due diligence. All right.
Well, let me just say, you know, again, it's more, it just affirms why, kind of why we do this in the first place, why we do this show.
Amen.
Why we do something like this, and you're talking about age, and you know, you and the other cousins and uncles didn't really have manuals. You guys really didn't talk about it a lot. You know, yeah, we have Aunt Edith, and, you know, Edith's got articles and all kind of stuff, and you got recorded conversations. You know, but, you know, this is why, again, why I'm glad that we are able and have the opportunity to do something like this where you can talk about your age. And for a man and for a black man, your age, you know, that's a heck of a book title right there, For a Man My Age or something like that. That's pretty kind of cool, too.
Let me where's my napkin? Right.
But I'm glad, you know, I'm just glad that we have these opportunities to hear you, you know, talk about that. So me and the Adams and the Rays and the JPs and everybody else in our generation can kind of pick something up. You know, I remember that time when I was listening to Unk on the Greenhouse Effect radio show,
Amen.
And he was saying, "Oh, I get it. You know, yeah, we're never too old to learn, right?" So,
Amen.
Yeah. So that's
Amen, man. Right on, man. Yeah.
So I know some people.
For a man.
Yeah, I like that. Write that down. So I know some people are like, a napkin. What's he talking about? I know sometimes the millions and millions of our listeners out there may not catch the beginning of the show. It's all good. That's why we like to provide due diligence at the beginning of every show. So with that, we always like to remind you all that there's a few things you can do before we really get into the meat of the show. The first thing is that we want to make sure that you got a pen and pad, a pencil and paper, post-it note, a marker, an envelope, and, of course, a napkin. Whatever you got, we want to make sure that you've got something to write with. You may have some questions. You may have a comment. You may even pick up something from our conversation. You know, who knows? But we want to make sure that you don't forget it.
Lord forbid.
So grab something to write with just in case. You never know what you're going to get from listening to our show.
Never know.
You never know. Another reminder is that we offer the opportunity for you all to engage with us on our live shows Mondays and Wednesday nights. So one way you can do that is that you can dial in directly, like talk shows. Everything doesn't have to be a podcast where you just listen. You can be a part of the show and share your thoughts and expressions and feelings with us. So to do that, you can just dial in directly. Our number here is 516-453-6094. Again, that's 516-453-6094. And, if you're feeling so inclined, you can just press 1 on your keypad, and that'll put your number in the queue, and we'll bring you in as soon as we can. Maybe you don't want to call in directly. We have the chat room that's available on Blog Talk Radio, the Blog Talk Radio site, again, / the Greenhouse Effects, the letter FX. And with your free profile on Blog Talk Radio, you can engage with us in the chat room. You can kick it with me and Dad, and, of course, Adam, who's always holding it down for us. What's up, Adam? I see you out there. And also we have our Facebook event page, which we always set up, because we know that's a lot of people's go-to. So you can always communicate with us in the event page. And, I will check that periodically, and share on the show as well. So there you have it from your friends at the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show.
Brought to you live. I see Jay Pastor out there. What's up, man?
JP in the house. What's up? Hope everybody's being safe and all that good stuff. You know, he's had a busy week.
Man, for real. You know, and it was just not even a week ago that we had our last show, and wow, man, this world is really moving at, you know, breakneck speed toward oblivion, I guess. I don't know. What's the hurry, right? Man.
Yeah, man. They like kick up the nitric oxide and just put it in fifth gear. And let's just
man.
Go. Fine. Yeah, I look up, man. You know, I look up and like the weekend, you know, I was hustling a lot this weekend. You know, out here gigging and everything. And I really didn't have a chance to put my ear down to the news and hear what was going on. And so I take a break and look up and it's just like, oh, my God, what the hell is going on? I mean, there's no easy
What the
way
hell to, is going on, man?
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, for real, man. You know, and I mean, like, I tend to watch the news a lot, but I've taken a break, man. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like feeling, well, probably isn't going to go anywhere. And sure enough, it's right where I left it. You know,
and worse in some points, you know, I mean,
which is right where I left it. You know, it was worse then. You know, it's just, you know, worse has become the operative, you know. You know, better is what I look for and worse is what I get, you know. So, you know, we have to find joy, you know, where we look. And if I'm not finding joy in the news, then I need to stop looking there, you know. And I'm finding, wow, okay, that gives me time to look elsewhere. And by golly, it works, you know. And I think sometimes we get hypnotized to the conditions of our environment, wherever that may be. And we think the conditions that have hypnotized us are the only options that are available. And breaking that trance, man, reopens that portal to possibility and happiness and joy and others. You know, suddenly a support system is more of a attribute, you know, than a negative, you know, meaning that so often, so many of us have support systems, but we don't recognize that they're there for support. So, yeah, we might go to them with complaint, but because we don't recognize, you know, the support element, we tend not to hear words being spoken back. And when we break that trance, you know, that disillusionment of powerlessness, it's amazing, man. At least I shouldn't say we. When I break that trance, it's amazing how quickly, you know, my support system is returned to the status of support. And suddenly the things that I didn't even expect to hear becomes the diagnosis of what needs to happen. It's really something how that can happen. So non-invasively. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
I just thinking, you know, like, I you know, I'm thinking that it's so easy to get caught in that.
Yeah, it is
caught in that web. You know, I mean, you know, look at what I was swimming through. You know, just a day or so ago. You know, and
that's
just
a good
taking
way to
a
put
moment
it, what you
to
were swimming through. Yeah,
you know, and taking a moment to breathe and meditate. You know, the other suggestions that you had to just calm the madness for a minute, because that's what was just, you know. Yeah, I was just swimming in, you know, going the wrong way, if you will. I was fighting the current. I don't know. But you get so caught up in that, and it can, you know, that other wolf, man, it can get you so quick, you know. You can feed it so fast, and it's full. And it's just so easy to get fat with that wolf. And, you know, it's just a matter of just trying to, not get caught up in it. So, yeah, anyway, I'm with you on that.
No, and that's a great metaphor you use, you know, swimming against the current. Sometimes that's exactly what happens. You know, current, we're in it, and we get to swimming and not even realizing I'm fighting the current. All I'm trying to do is just swim harder, harder, harder. You know, and the current ain't letting me, but I'm not even aware if I'm swimming against the current. I'm just swimming just not to drown. And all I got to do is stop swimming and let the current take me where it's taking me. You know, like, oh, okay. Just go with the flow sometimes. Sometimes.
It's not rolling with the punches
as much as it is going with the flow. So did you finish your due diligence? I don't even remember hearing it. Yeah, you did. Okay. you told everybody. Okay. So you were talking about something during our rundown. And you were giving me a lesson in African American history, Americans of color history, whatever somebody wants to call it. Can you recap that again so we can get it on the record?
Yeah, absolutely. In a previous show, maybe it's been about 2 months now, we did a show, and for those of you, for those of you listening, you can go back and listen to our shows. They are saved and archived on the Blog Talk Radio site or on other platforms as well. We have a particular one entitled Nanny Helen Burroughs. And in this episode, I talked about Helen Burroughs, who in 1909, a black woman in 1909, started a school called the National Training School for Women and Girls in D.C. And this was basically to help support and educate black women who, and black people also, but her main focus was black women at the time, to get them better education, because black people just weren't getting the same education as white people. So I was on social media the other day, and I saw a post about a gentleman by the name of black man named John Barry Meacham. Now, I see posts on Facebook all the time, but I like to take some time and research because, some things may be true and some things may not. And I did a little research on John Barry Meacham.
Wait a minute. You said that there's some things on Facebook that ain't true?
There's some things that's not true. That's right, man. Wow. You got to research sometimes, ladies and gentlemen.
My God.
You just can't. You just stop it, man.
All right, I'm sorry. Let me take you off track.
I was trying to keep my serious voice, Bill. I was trying to
go right back to it.
So
oh my God,
my research,
I hope that ain't your serious voice.
All my serious.
Go ahead, man. Go on.
John Barry, and I just wanted to share what I found with everybody else. So thank you for giving me this moment. So John Barry Meacham was born in Virginia, 1789, as a slave. And when he turned 21, he used his skills as a carpenter to, this allowed him to buy his freedom. And not everybody is able to do this, of course, because you need the permission also of the white slaver. But he was able to buy his freedom through his skills as a carpenter. And he took his wife, Mary, and they went to St. Louis. And he also worked and got her. He worked on getting her freedom as well. So they lived in St. Louis, and they founded the first African Baptist Church in 1827. And this Baptist Church, it helped to educate up to 300 students, rather 300 black students. And it was regardless if they were free or if they were still slaves, they opened their doors to educate all black people. But what happened was the residents in Missouri didn't like it. Can you believe that? They didn't like it. They were a little angry and probably scared because you had these people who were educating themselves. Oh, my God, right? So in 1847, the state of Missouri banned education for all black people. The state of Missouri in 1847 banned education. And they didn't even allow black people to move to Missouri. So not only did you couldn't even get an education, but you couldn't even move there as a black person. This was 1847. Whether you were free or a slave as a black person in Missouri, and this was written in their legislation, you were required to obey and recognize your white residence or whatever. You know, this is 1847 in the state of Missouri. Crazy. So my man, Brother Meacham, decided, you know what? I'm going to get me a steamboat. He built a library in the steamboat, put some desks and chairs, and created a school. The floating Freedom School. And this boat traveled on the water, which was outside of the state of Missouri's jurisdiction. So they couldn't restrict the education for black people. So he had this ferry boat, man, and was educating people and found another way to make it work. You know, so And on a side note, his wife, Mary Meacham, she was after my man died in like 1854, I believe, she was still very active in helping slaves to get free. Her house was registered as a stop for the Underground Railroad, Mary Meacham. So, you know, this is kind of like a power couple. This is like the original power couple of black people, black Americans, you know?
Man, can dig it, yeah.
But,
go ahead.
So,
man.
You know, so as we, you know, we acknowledge people like Helen Burroughs, or we acknowledge John Berry Meacham, or we acknowledge other people who accomplished so many things in black American history, we also have to, you know, also remember why they did it in the first place. Because now we're having to deal with this effort to erase history. You know, they don't even want to acknowledge what happened in the past. They don't even want to acknowledge slavery, you know. But we have to remember these things. And because when we remember these people, you know, we have to remember why did they build these schools?
Amen.
Why is he on the steamboat in the water? Because the entire state banned education for people and didn't even allow people to move in, you know, and even relating it today. You know, and I love this about the show, how we can look at history and then relate it to today's time. So you're like, well, what are you talking about? In this new era, you know, this new COVID era, and I've been talking about this for a while also. This is another bit of consistency. And again, ladies and gentlemen, go back and listen to the other shows. You know, remember when students weren't even going to school and parents are trying to figure out how are they going to educate their children? But we have to... You know, these are small reminders that, you know, and even something like COVID, I think we have to be aware and we have to think about these things. We have to consider creative ideas and think of ways to changing legislations and changing laws as we continue to go through this time of what we really don't know, because there is no more normal. There's no back to normal anymore, you know, and we still don't know what's ahead of us. So we have to understand and learn about it's okay to be creative and it's okay to adapt to changes, especially when it comes to educating our children. So I just wanted to, you know, introduce John Berry Meacham, you know, and you know, just another historical figure here on the Greenhouse Effects radio show. So thank you for allowing me to share this brief moment of American history.
Oh, man. Thank you for the presentation. You've raised my level of consciousness or my level of awareness regarding homeschooling. You know, I'm not sure, you know, if black folk have ever considered not homeschooling, but homeschooling for black folk or for black children, you know. Homeschooling, you know, like seems to be a generic approach, but maybe, you know, maybe there's a model waiting to be developed, you know, for black parents or guardians to begin to utilize for, you know, their black children, you know, or, you know, guardian tees or, you know, whatever, you know what I'm saying, you know, that really that has, you know, not just, okay, so what's different? Well, it's not the same thing, just, you know, but we're just going to call it black. No, that in fact it does, as a part of its homeschooling, you know, deal with diversity in like U.S. history, you know, deal in diversity regarding all of the basic themes of the educational system, that since, you know, critical race theory and all of so many of the other elements that would help sensitize people to the issues born from slavery, since those things are being, you know, etched out of school books, you know, left and right, you know, somehow let's once again, you know, neutralize black people as a people, you know, let's invisibilize them. Maybe there needs to be a push, you know, by black guardians, black parents, black educators, whatever the case may be, to really build on the idea of black homeschooling. You know, this element left, you know, to the devices of those who dictate social policy are making it clearer and clearer, you know, that we're becoming less than even a footnote when it comes to American citizens. Less and less of an American citizen. I have to I have to work on that word. I have it next week. Yeah, you know, but less and less of an American citizen, you know? And we seem to, we seem to be debating the issue instead of demanding, you know, something from our black leaders. No. You know, this is, and again, you know, when I say black leaders, I don't mean the convenient black leaders. I mean the inconvenient black leaders. You made a post on Facebook that, you know, really got me cranked, and it had to do with the Ukrainian soccer team.
Oh, man.
You want to speak on that a little bit before I start tripping?
Yeah. So I'm going to give you so Sue and I were out.
No, go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah. Sue and I were out, and we were, and I noticed on the screen, you know, the sports and stuff, and it was for a soccer tournament, and it was like Wales versus Ukraine, and I had to do a double take. I'm like, Ukraine? Wait, maybe that's not Ukraine, but there is no other Ukraine, you know? It's just more Ukraine, you know? Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, soccer? Why are they playing soccer? What do you mean? Ukraine? What?
Yeah.
You know, I had to like look it up and make sure I wasn't tripping. So I just really had to, you know, it was just one of those things where I had to just kind of get it out of my system. And that's what I sometimes, you know, use Facebook for that. And you know, why is there a Ukraine team playing soccer? And I really find it hard to understand how you can play soccer while your land is being invaded and your people are getting killed.
Yes. Huh? Yeah, man. Keep going.
I just, you know, and I just don't really get that. And at first, you know, looking at some of the comments on here, and I know you're going to get into some more of it, I was surprised but not surprised by some of the comments, and it really made me start to think it's almost a reflection of black Americans, because some people were like, oh, well, you know, it's just, you know, we just keep moving. Life goes on.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's like people need something to be happy or proud about.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What? What?
Yeah.
So you mean like if we had our own land, like, and then we were getting invaded, that would be okay if we out here still playing ball with LeBron or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't get that. You know, somebody was like, what would you have them do? You fight. What do you,
You fight. You know, you fight, and you fight for freedom. You know, you fight for survival. You fight for
your family.
Visibility. Yeah, you fight for family. Oh my God, family. Oh, where did that come from?
Well, you know.
You fight for the right to live. You know, but go ahead, man.
You already started, man. I'm putting it back on you. I mean, it really just blew my mind. You know, that this is such a phenomenon, a phenomenal situation that's affecting the world, but not affecting the world because they're not involved. They're kind of involved, but not involved. And so it's just like the more and more you look at it, it's like, what the hell is going on? Excuse my language again, but it's like,
what hell?
Well, I'm just saying. You know,
go ahead. I don't.
I've been kind of loose lately.
Words
so.
That I find in the Bible. Go ahead, man.
I've been a little loose lately, so I'm just trying to catch up. Yeah, but you know, I just didn't understand.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, but understanding or not understanding, obviously, a point being raised is worthy of discussion or debate, and that brings me to the point of black leaders may not be the convenient ones, the ones that are supposedly voted into office, you know, but it may be the ones that we have given so much power to, you know, in the way of distraction, like our athletes and entertainers, and maybe they need to be held to a higher standard, you know, like, you know, comments made on that post, like, well, you know, we need, you know, distractions. No, we don't need distractions.
We got plenty of them already.
But distractions is what keep us docile, what keeps us from getting – it's like our dope. You know, we get to holler and scream about a slam dunk or a grand slam, you know, or a record broken running the 400, whatever the case may be. Well, maybe we don't need that distraction anymore. Maybe we need to have a reality check on every level that refuses us the opportunity to turn a blind eye to what's really going on. Maybe even our black churches need to step up a little bit along with the sermon and the gospel. You know, maybe also the validity of, you know, the violence depicted in the Old Testament, you know, and for a just cause. Maybe, you know, we need to recognize that distraction is what this country counts on, you know, and distraction comes in so many forms, you know, that extra dollar that shows up in the mailbox, whatever the case may be. But the point you raised and the way so many reacted to it just stirred me, not, you know, in an angry retort, but in a moment of consciousness raising, you know, that this is a dialogue we don't have. We wait for somebody else to have it, like we wait for a LeBron to speak up, or we wait for a Dwayne Wade to speak up. You know, we quit waiting for Michael Jordan to speak up. He made it clear, you know, when he made the statement, Republicans buy gym shoes too. That lets you know where Michael's coming from. You know, so they don't even bother him anymore. You know,
he's not alone.
As the black person, the black man running for Congress in North Carolina found out. No, you know, yeah, you're going to have to go an extra mile to get Mike's endorsement. You know, so, you know, but even that, you know, recognizing even, you know, the ebb and the flow of dialogue, you know, like, is it something that requires complete agreement? No. Is it something that should stir up instant disagreement? No, but it definitely is something that should spark conversation. But we're so comfortable with distractions, and we use everything that we have at our disposal to distract us, to avoid the conversations of the time, you know. And there is a war going on in America, whether people want to accept it or not, you know. And this war going on in America is directed toward poor people, it's directed toward black people, and it's directed toward women, and it's directed toward people of color. And have I left anybody out? You know, immigrants, what illegal aliens. What is that? Some attack from Mars? I don't get that with it either. You know, and you know, I sure don't get, you know, I surely do not stomach, and I'll never accept a description of an entire population of people as being a minority. You know, and that, to me, that's the simplest way to avoid any humanitarian conversation with an individual, is by just lumping him or her in a category of minority. You know, not only are you minority, but you're also a minority race. And not only are you a minority race, but you're a minority race of color. That can only exist in a country that has the idea of the majority being white, which isn't even a race. White isn't a race any more than Negro is a race. That is something invented, as we've talked about in previous shows. So I'm not going to. You can breathe easy. I'm not going to start, Will. You know, but that point though that you posted, man, and the immediate reaction, it's like, how dare you deny it? You know, that's what cost Jimmy Carter re-election, because he refused to let our Olympian heroes, participate in the Olympics because of what Russia was doing. He said, no, we're not going to go play a sport game with a country that is doing what it's doing to a population of people to dominate them, to crush them. We're not going to do it. And America could not believe he was not going to allow his athletes to go play sports, games, with the same country that was annihilating human beings. Of course, you never hear that about Jimmy Carter. What an amazing guy.
Anyway, no, they always, to me, it always seems like they talk more of him being incompetent, but
they talk about his family. They talk about Billy, talk about so many, they talk about his Christianity, my God, man, how the political spectrum is in its hypocrisy can at a whim change its own direction and flow faster than the wind, man. Just to accommodate, an illusion of power. So that's why with the same themes over and over again, and still resulting in the same results. And this country is not in a new conflict. We all know that. It's just a matter of how up to date we are in history to know this is the same stuff. Yeah, I scared you, didn't I? Same stuff, different thing.
I mean, and even going back to, we talked a lot about
Jesus.
American athletes, but if Ukraine is playing in this soccer game, like what if these soccer players stop playing? If this is such a worldwide, empathetic movement, all these countries are so sad and feeling for Ukraine. I still just in closing on that subject, What if they stop playing? Because soccer is so big overseas. We never really understood how big it is here in America, but I'm sure that would be a huge impact. The fact that these guys got to play anyway. I'm gonna tell you, and I don't know. You might call this conspiracy theory coming out of me. Either the situation in Ukraine is not as big as they make it, and it's kind of a hoax. For these guys to be playing how it is, or soccer is such a big financial entity overseas that they have no choice but to play.
The people want that distraction. However,
they want that distraction.
I have a hard time believing that the people in Ukraine, based on the things I'm seeing, the things I'm hearing, and the things I'm feeling, I doubt if there's a part of Ukraine that is huddled down in front of the TV to watch a soccer game, with all of what's going on in its country. We're not talking about Inglewood, in comparison to the United States. We're talking about all of the country under attack, where the war is always seeking another place to reveal itself. So every area is vulnerable, and so people, I have a hard time believing people in Ukraine are turning the station from watching migrations and trying to find out how to get out of the country just to spend an hour or two watching a soccer game. So obviously this must be for other people. It must be to give other people some relief, other countries some relief. It must be, to suggest, that there is hope in the fact that the soccer team is still able to play, even though, we'd rather watch that than watch the decimation of an entire country. I don't get it. I don't know what you even mean by conspiracy theory in this regard. you know, it's the, you know, insensitivity, you know, of a world at times. I'm not saying the whole world is insensitive to the plight of Ukraine. I mean, obviously, this government, you know, sending billions of dollars to Ukraine, you know, you know, it ain't spending a dollar on reparations. But that's another subject, you know, for another time, right? As it's done so often, the distraction even there, you know, let's inundate the news with what's going on elsewhere, so we don't have to deal with the issues that are going on right here in our country. That's always been the tactic. You know, there's always been something more important that's going on elsewhere than dealing with the things that are a blight to our very own country. You know, that's always been, you know, the method and approach. You know, so anyway, you know, right on, man. You know, you raise a beautiful thing about Meacham. Is that right? Did I get the name right?
I believe so. Yeah, Meacham.
Yeah. I forgot his first name, but that's Meacham.
John Barry.
John and Mary Meacham. Yeah, and definitely.
M-E-A-C-H-U-M.
An important issue about you know, the different ways that you know, different people find distractions with, you know, the true devastation that's going on around the world. You know, and maybe, you know, maybe it's even a distraction for America to find some kind of false pride in, yeah, but we're sending a lot of money. Well, and we're sending a lot of, you know, tools of destruction, you know, yeah. You know, I don't know the way of the world in that regard. You know, all I know is as I get older, I just have a hard time understanding why law-abiding folks need so many weapons of destruction. You know, obviously it's not a dichotomy to most. It's like, well, I need, you know, my guns to protect me, you know, from the violence that may come walking through my door. Okay. How often has the violence come walking in through your door? Well, that's not the point. I got these guns, you know, and me having my guns and the justification of it allows you to have your gun, you know, and however you may use it. I remember the NRA had a slogan that said, you know, guns don't kill people. People kill people. But they kill them with guns. that's not the point, you know, and that's still not the point. So I don't know why so many law-abiding folks need guns and why, you know, in having their guns, they use them so violently. You know, man, I mean, I remember the old West movies I used to watch, and here I am living in Texas, you know, where Texas is becoming the mecca of mass shootings. It's already the head of it, you know. But old Westerns, you know, where it was unpopular for the sheriff to decide, no guns in our town, you know, and he would put up signs, you know, gun, register your guns. You know, you can have your guns, but register them when you come to town and pick them up when you leave, you know, and how all the gun-toting folks had issues with that. Those that didn't have guns had no problem with it. It's like, cool, you know, with no guns, we ain't got to worry about being shot. And it was up to law enforcement to enforce that ordinance. Well, you know, and I'm not going to get into it today. Maybe we can do that in another show. But this is not new, what Congress is dealing with in the demand for laws to deal with these gun issues. There's always been an acts of Congress to deal with gun issues. This didn't just happen, but it's not talked about. So maybe we can talk about it in a future show, the different kind of laws that have been put in place. You know, I mean, because most people don't even understand what the Second Amendment really says. You know, it's not about you having the right to have a gun, you know, and let's face it, the guns they're talking about were single-loaded instruments that took a half hour to load. You know, man, you show up in my office with one of them big blunderbuss, you know, and when you shoot it lets out a cloud of dust. You think I'm going to sit there to wait for the cloud to settle and for you to take, you know, 10 minutes to reload it? I'm out of there, you know, or are we going to attack you full force, you know? So,
right.
You know, and I, you know, one congressman Brian, I forget the city or the state he represented, you know, made a big issue of saying they need their automatic weapons. It's what they use to kill, you know, possums and raccoons to attack their chicken. You know, they need their automatic weapons. I don't remember, you have a cousin that uses a BB gun, a ball bearing shooter, to chase critters away from his backyard. You know, he ain't getting out there with no AK-14 just wailing at him, man. So Adam's dad, you know, and they learn eventually. Yeah, you come around there, you're going to get popped in your butt. So, you know, they stop coming, but they don't teach their children not to come around anyway. Yeah, I'm getting ridiculous. But the point being that the issue of guns is not a new concern. The issue of guns now has elevated itself, right, to where we have these weapons of mass destruction, and we ought to call them that because that's what they are. They're weapons of mass destruction that do unbelievable disrepair to the human body. Disrepair, and I'm using that word purposely because doctors and first responders will tell you people hit by these weapons, their bodies are so decimated that they will never be put back together again in the way they were, you know. And we don't seem to be understanding. Adam wrote in chat, stop talking about my dad. You know, anyway, you know, so I know that we've gone off track and I apologize for that, man, but you know, good points, good stuff, good, you know. I'm glad we have it on record because there's still this book, man, you know, The Greenhouse Effect, waiting to be written, and it's going to be based on these shows, you know. Yeah, and having them archived makes it real easy to research, you know, and, you know, and there's a reason for it. You know, there's a reason for it because, again, a book like that will be able to offer, you know, a voice, an aspect of recording, you know, of issues that are pertinent to black people that don't exist in the history books, you know, in a way that recognizes its impact on black folks, you know. And even, well, before I even go on, so go ahead, man, finish, you know, where you are with these nuggets that you've dropped on us tonight. I don't want to, you know, take you off stride so completely.
No, I'm kind of, I've already kind of put it in neutral now. I was letting you go ahead and take the bull as far as, you know, I know we only have a few minutes left. So that was,
right.
That was really all I had left just to share for tonight's show. I mean, I got some more stuff I can ask, you know, but I always got a lot of more that I could throw out there. But no, as far as just any nuggets or anything.
Go
like
ahead,
that,
man. Sling it. Go on, sling it. What?
No, yeah. Well.
What you got?
I saw that, well, just some current events, you know, news and stuff like that. You know, that there's this executive order, I guess, that Biden signed last week. As far as like the use of force, but it's more or less for federal law enforcement. And I guess it's just encouraging local police departments to make changes. So, you know, and it's just as far as like the same stuff that we've been trying to get changed anyway, you know, as far as like chokeholds and all these things that police uses to detain more specifically people of color, black people. But this reform, so if people are reading about this new police reform, you know, keep in mind, again, you got to research and look at these articles. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, good. You know, I mean, yeah, I guess it's a good thing because, you know, we always talk about how change happens slowly. But it's just really...
I don't talk about that. Y'all do. Yeah, go ahead.
how,
well, don't,
you know,
put me on the record as saying that, yeah.
Well, just that, again, it is just about federal, you know, law enforcement. So maybe that'd be good for, like, Border Patrol, like, you know, immigrants. And... You okay over there?
All right, making too much noise. I'm sorry, I was fanning myself. Sorry.
Go ahead. Okay. No, just that, you know, for like Border Patrol or something like that, it might be a good thing. But hopefully, I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm not familiar.
That would be a good thing.
Well, I mean, they won't be putting them all in chokeholds all the time, I'd hope. But anyway, I'm just curious. I mean, like, do you think that, I guess, how can I put this? Like, in this case, do you really think that this is just, like, more propaganda type stuff? Or do you think, like, it could actually eventually, you know, trickle down to affect law enforcement locally?
You're throwing out a concept that has a broader reach than the options you're allowing. Like even the thing I said about Border Patrol, I'm not talking about chokeholds being, you know, whatever they, you know, illegal or legal. I'm talking about the whole issue of people crossing the border is another issue that even Border Patrol hasn't figured out how to address, and how they've been doing it is far beyond chokeholds, you know, and cruel and unjust punishments, you know. So now, as far as, you know, any kind of federal law, you know, as opposed to a local law, is what has always been the issue, just like civil rights, voters' rights, you know, and even the issues of education, you know, it's a toothless dragon that says this is a federal law if it's not enforced by local standards. And this is the whole point of, again, taking a broader look at the political spectrum. It's got nothing to do with conspiracy theories or propaganda. It has to do with understanding how the political system works. If you have a governor who is not going to enforce federal law, then the state only has to enforce state law. So, you know, and then if you have a Supreme Court that is political as opposed to apolitical or neutral and is only there to support whatever the federal law says, then, you know, these issues are so much far more reaching than what most people, especially black folks, you know, want to even investigate to begin with. So our tendency is just to take what little nuggets of gossip we get and trust that gossip is the true artifact of everything that has ever existed in the world. You know, and there's always some element of truth in black gossip, but it's rarely the full picture. We kind of trip on the way a person presents something as opposed to what's being presented. You know, we like that. We like to, you know, we like the way we can sling words and deal with, you know, any kind of rhythmic dialogue as opposed to the facts behind the lyrics. So, you know, when we talk about, you know, just that, it's something worthy of investigation and debate, absolutely, and discussion. Man, totally agree with you. But we have to have a foundation of understanding, you know, where we're coming from. So, you know, that's what I mean by change, you know, is always an element suspect to me, because I want to know what's being done about change, not the fact that supposedly change exists. I haven't seen anything that suggests the effective change in this country. And I don't see an effective change just because we have more black faces in Congress. Obviously, there's a debate even with that. Somebody said, what do you mean? Well, take a look at Clarence Thomas. Take a look at Tim Scott. You know, there are people who absolutely have no problem with the platform from which they speak. And there are others like me who have a big problem with it. But they have federal law backing them. So, you know, so I don't know, man. I agree with the idea of the debate, but I also think we need to really take time into understanding what we're debating. You know, this is a very convoluted country we live in that from its inception has been designed to only placate a certain particular population of privilege. And it's unfortunate that that is not the common conversation coming from the news, coming from the White House, coming from Congress, coming from the beauty parlor, you know, that the issue first and foremost is this country has been built on the platform of white privilege. And I don't know why, you know, that's such a difficult term, you know, to highlight and headline any level of debate. It's all based on the issues. I mean, now it's all, now white men are under attack. That's one of the headlines. Well, okay, why are they under attack? You know, what is it that they support? What do they represent? You know, and what do they stand for? And what are they against? That's what they're under attack about. But that's never the conversation. We have this soft soap approach to dealing with the hard facts. You know, like an example, if I may, real quick. This country is still, you know, hung up on Trump-backed Senate candidates. Why?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why is that even worthy, you know, of headlines? You know, now this guy, Republican Senate candidate Blake Masters, who was endorsed last week by former President Donald Trump in Arizona's GOP primary, admits that the country is facing a problem of gun violence, but blamed the issue on black people. I mean, you know, so right away, if you're going to acknowledge somebody who Trump is backing, before you go any further, to me, the question is, what is this person's stance on race issues? Yeah, forget anything else, you know, and like until people understand that if you're going to even see Trump in the headlines, you already know where it's coming from. My issue isn't any of that. My issue is, what do I do about neighbors and associates who I find out, you know, back Trump? You know, what do I do about that? How do I react to somebody who favors Trump? You know, do I have a conversation I can have with them? Do I want a conversation I can have with them?
But that's a good question. Yeah. Do you want it? That's a good one that you need to ask yourself.
But can we have it? You know, can we have an intelligent conversation about, for me, it would be, why do you back Trump? And for them, it may be, why don't you? Can we have that kind of discussion? I'd really like to. You know, I'd like to know, you know, what the person really understands about America as a functioning government. I'd really like to know what the person understands about the history of America and what it was founded on. Most people have a mythical belief about America, and America doesn't hesitate to put out its chest to allow that false myth, you know, because myth is always based on truth. But that false myth that somehow this is a democratic society. Well, it isn't. And this other thing about, you know, well, you know, it's better than most places or better than any place else. For some, you know, but then the comparative starts. Well, what if you were living in poverty-stricken Africa? I don't. I live in poverty-stricken America.
Yeah. Poverty-stricken USA, man, on the south side. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that presents its own unique challenges. So, you know, and I apologize, man. I do agree with what y'all say about change. You know,
I just sometimes feel it doesn't really happen fast enough. But I'm just considering, looking at how other things happen quickly, but then.
Yeah. I think
selectively
not to cut you off,
things that don't
ahead,
happen.
Sorry.
No, that's it.
I saw a couple hands raised. It looks like you got some folks who want to talk. If I wanted to get us out the way, if we want to go a little bit overtime, I think I saw Adam and Jay
can
Pastor
you,
out there. But
can you bring them in?
You bring them in?
Oh, I was hoping you could.
All right, well, hold on a second. I'm going to bring them both in.
Okay, right on.
Okay.
Oh, Jay Pastor. Jay Pastor, it may be a battle tonight.
Adam, well, you both Adam. Are. You got. You know, and forget about what your area code is or whatever. You know, now y'all on. So, you know, take it while we can stand it. You know, Jay Pastor, Adam, what's
hey,
up?
There they go.
How you guys doing tonight?
And his best friend.
Yeah, man, I did not expect to hear from you tonight, Jay Pastor, because, man, you've been on the road, you know, forever.
Right.
Oh, man.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Still on the road, man, and I was in the woods, so I missed some of the show because I was using my iPhone for GPS and my Android wasn't getting a good signal, so it kept kicking me out. But just real quick, I kind of missed one important thing. We was talking about, I guess, Meter. Was that his last name?
Meacham.
Okay, Meacham. Okay, so a phone dropped right when you went to tell him about Meacham, and then I was able to get back on after his wife kind of took over after he passed. So I just wanted, if you could, real quick, just kind of recap what Meacham did.
Well,
just
real quick. So, the state of Missouri in 1847 decided that black people could no longer be educated, pretty much. And so what the brother did was that he got a ferry boat, put some books and desks and chairs on the ferry boat, and provided a floating school because the water was not in the state of Missouri's jurisdiction. For those of you that watch the Ozark, you know what I'm talking about. But at that time, so at that time, there was no jurisdiction for him to provide education for black people on the water. So he set up a floating school.
Oh, man, that's beautiful.
Yeah, ain't it?
Yes, sir. All right, Adam, let me get out of the way.
Oh, you're never in the way, Jay Pastor.
Amen. Adam just went to defend his dad.
No, but the one thing I was going to say is when I typed in conspiracy theorist, I was talking about you saying Facebook doesn't tell lies. Facebook is nothing but the truth. All true, 100%.
All true. Yeah, just like when you Google something, it's all based on this.
But I have a question because it was probably maybe a month and a half ago, there was a sheriff from Florida who, I guess, somebody broke into somebody's house in Florida and the homeowner shot at the intruder, and the sheriff went on live TV and said, "We need more people like you because then you're not using our resources." Basically saying, if somebody breaks into your house, we want you to shoot at them.
And
yeah.
There's a question in there.
But what sense does that make?
Well, yeah. You got
to
say this, man.
Are you trying to make sense out of it?
Hey, right. You got to be careful. You got to be careful with that in the first place. You know, and this is where, you know, we talk about gun control and stuff, and I think that everybody needs to be knowledgeable, not only of the firearms that you use, but also of the laws of your particular area. You know, you have these laws where you could, you know, a warning or whatever, you know, or you can shoot people in your home. But you got to be careful because if they're outside your house, you could go to jail. You know, if you shoot somebody in the back, you could go to jail. You just have to understand exactly what you're getting into. And that this firearm is just going to protect you because you're scared. You need to understand and know more about it. So.
And Florida, Florida's a special place though, because you know Trayvon Martin, he wasn't breaking in anybody's house. He was walking down the street, but somebody felt threatened.
Okay, but let's like you asked the question as relates to home invasion and somebody breaking in. If I have a gun, I have it for that very reason, to protect my home. And if somebody's breaking in, I don't know, and I don't have a gun. I don't know what, but hypothetically, if I had a gun and if I had it to protect my home and if somebody's breaking into my home, I'd like to believe that I'd first give out a warning. Not a warning shot, but that might be a way to do it. But I'd like to believe, hey, look, I got a gun. You don't get your ass out of here. I'm coming down blazing. You know, I'd like to believe I'd have that kind of, that's the kind of dialogue I have in my dreams. But I'm sure what the sheriff is saying is because there are so many issues that are challenging law enforcement today in the right way and the wrong way to approach any kind of person breaking the law or who is actually breaking the law. I'm sure what the sheriff is saying, I'm not sure. I'm assuming what the sheriff is saying, short of saying we need vigilantes, I'm almost certain he's saying we need folks who are willing to protect their own property, you know,
right.
and do it accordingly.
And that goes back to what I was saying earlier and what I've been saying about policing and protecting our own community.
And there's a point even being made about that because I don't know if we mentioned it on the show a couple of weeks ago, but there are communities that do that.
Yes.
And we need to bring that up again, you know. And I think it would be, first of all, I think like Inglewood in Chicago on the south side where violence is at epidemic proportions, I think since Chicago has a police force, I think there should be designated Inglewood police. And I think the point you're making is a valid point in itself. Let's train people to patrol their own streets. But we have to understand one of the great, we meaning us, you know, one of the great challenges about law enforcement training is that it's not the training, it's who you're training. You know, and that screening process really needs a more sophisticated approach. When I was sworn into the armed service, there were certain things that I had to answer to before I was sworn in. And there were certain aspects of me that were vetted even after I was sworn in. You know, like just because I gave the answers didn't make it factual. I was still under scrutiny all through my service. And when I got a secret crypto clearance, which is the next highest you can have, only the president has higher, and generals in the armed service, you know, my background was thoroughly investigated. You know, it's not the training, it's who you train. You know, and I think, you know, that an approach toward your idea, Will, you know, is something that most definitely the Black Panther Party showed could be a very effective way of dealing with black-on-black crime anyway, you know, which to me is the operative here. You know, you go, you know, and I think that's the conversation that doesn't happen. Instead, people would rather just say, oh, that's just them killing each other. You know, well, that's not what we mean by gun control. So, you know. Anyway.
So I have another question, if I can. And, of course, it's going to be controversial. But, Will, with you talking
about... What? Should black and white people marry? I'm sorry. Go ahead, man.
Why you got to bring up old stuff?
Well, that's kind of what we do on this show. But go ahead. Ask your question. Let's see if my theory is correct.
But, Will, with you talking about not under or questioning or not understanding or just wanting to know about the Ukraine soccer team playing during the war. There's a war every day in the streets of Chicago. From my understanding, there's a war damn near every day in the streets of Chicago.
That's what we were just talking about.
But the Bulls are still playing. Nobody's saying, hey, there's a war in Illinois and in Chicago, so why are the Bulls still playing? Why are the Cubs still playing?
That's the point. Yeah. You know, like that's the point we've been making for the last month. Well, May anyway. You know, and until that, see, again, until we take it upon ourselves to redesignate what we call leaders, you know, we're going to continue to let the games go on, you know, and unless those who play the games are held to a higher standard, we're going to continue to use the games to find some kind of social relief.
Yeah.
Right on. Man, a train came in perfectly.
Go ahead, Adam.
Go ahead, Adam.
But maybe that's how the soccer players in Ukraine are defending their country, and that's what they can do.
I get it.
Well,
I get it. I get
don't.
It. I mean, I get what they're saying. I don't agree.
I don't.
I get what you're saying. You know that through them playing, it provides a upliftment or something like that.
I don't get
but
that.
I don't get that at all.
You're talking about a complete country that's under siege, you know, and I cannot believe that people in that country find time to turn on their TVs to see what the soccer game is like.
When this first started, and all we heard about how people were models were strapping up, putting, you know, getting their weapons. People who had those privileges of being world travelers, of doing this and doing that, they were stopping everything they were doing, and they were gunning up, and they were ready for war. You don't hear about them anymore. You know, we see the president sort of, you know, but it's just, I mean, when there's other issues with countries, you rarely see those other countries engage in sports activities. But if you want to use the example of Chicago per se, you know, this is what, you know, we've talked about, and you've heard us, you've been a part of these discussions where it's kind of a distraction though, but it's the wrong kind of distraction, you know?
Well,
and
go ahead.
And it's just a simple, what if you're in your state, and if your state is being invaded right now, all the black men and black people in your state right now are being hunted. You're not going to be worried about no sports. You're going to protect your land. You're going to protect your people. You're going to protect your family. And that's what I just don't understand.
Yeah.
How you can do, how can you do anything else but protect your land, your family? I just,
you know,
don't
because
get
some,
that.
But some
in
people are
book,
built for that, and some people aren't, though. But that's,
you know,
that's
the
difference.
Okay. Yeah,
or maybe not.
Well,
I think Will, you raised the point, and you know, to me, if there's a debate, let's debate the point. Are you going to stop defending what's yours to watch the Bulls, or will the Bulls even be a thought when it comes to your children about to be attacked by a mob? You know, well, wait, I got to watch this fourth quarter. You know, y'all just, you know, put your back against the door until I see who wins. No, you know, that's where the debate has to go. All, you know, forget going any further. Let's keep it right there. Man, what a beautiful thing. Will, you know, like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do if and when this? No, what are you going to do if this government and the direction it's heading eventually rescinds the 14th Amendment and cast all black people back into a status of slavery? What are you going to do about that when the mob now can come at you like they used to come at you, when they can find their own entertainment by hanging your ass from a tree and setting it on fire? What are you going to, you know, are you going to worry about what place Boston is in? You know, are you going to expect the black ball players to step their asses off the court and strap up? You know, here's the debate right here.
But that's the reality of it. Some people will and some people won't.
Well, there's the argument right there. What are you going to do about those that don't? What are you going to do about those that continue to entertain their white masters. Well, we got history books that explain that. And if we learn anything from history, we will accept that's how we got to where we are right now. See,
that's
there
why
are still
we're,
those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always,
go ahead.
Yeah. I'm sorry. That's why. Yeah. That's why we're where we are right now.
Yeah.
So then those that don't want to take up arms, and those that want to turn the blind eye, are they
two
just
different
suppo-
things?
Are
there's two different just... things. Those are two different scenarios. Those that don't take up arms, very well, may be the politicians. They may be the ministers. They may be, you know, conscientious objectors.
Objectors.
That doesn't
yep.
mean that they're against you. But those who refuse to acknowledge the plight, oh, they're making it clear that they have a completely different agenda. You know, now how that's dealt with, well, that's what's up for debate. You know, who do we hold accountable? It's where we are right now. And we have people
yeah.
who we're not holding accountable. And we have them on all platforms. I'm talking about black folks right now. Us black folks have people right now, politicians, entertainers, athletes, you know, ministers. We have a plethora to choose from that the agenda that they espouse are clear. What side of the fence they teeter on, you know, and we have to decide as a collective, you know, what we are going to continue to support and what we are no longer going to continue to support. Look, we have banks that we use, like Chase, Bank of America, so forth. You know, where are the black banks? You know, why does our money that leaves our community so rapidly go to the banks that don't support the issues of our community? But we don't deal with that. It's too inconvenient.
Because we're too selfish.
We're too
selfish.
You know,
LeBron,
you know when the revolution
LeBron.
Comes. Yeah. Well, LeBron does a lot of work. You know, he does a lot of, I mean, he's putting a lot of money in the schools. He's putting, I mean, like, he was the guy who stepped up with the Flint, Michigan water crisis hit, you know. But again, you know, we don't have as a collective, we don't have a black view of the news. We have black people in the news. You know, they talk about whatever the owner of the news station says this is what you're going to talk about, but we don't have a black view of the news. We don't have a black radio station or TV station that is going to give an opinion of black issues like we get in all the major outlets that are really giving an opinion of white justice and sometimes use black people to talk about it, you know, and sometimes we'll give an opinion, you know, on a white station about a black issue. But we don't have black stations. We don't have black radio outlets. We don't have, you know, black forms of enlightenment that are always talking about black plight. That's what all our news is going to talk about is black plight, is black struggle, is black issue, black victory. That's all we're going to talk about, black candidates. You know, we don't have that. But we get that in the white outlets that sometimes include black people. But we don't have black outlets that may at times include white people. You know, we don't think like that. We just react to the social status of the world. We do not take it upon ourselves to create it. So we got an Al Sharpton. Well, Al ain't going to risk his job, you know. And maybe that sounds cruel for me to say. But I'm not saying it all in a negative way. Maybe Al feels he's not going to risk his job because if he loses – what little bit of an outlet, a mouthpiece he has, who's going to take his place? What happened with Thurgood Marshall stepped down? We got Clarence Thomas. Yeah, man.
But, I mean, and all due respect, we have the greenhouse effect.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Amen. Yeah. And we got millions of people who listen.
Millions.
But you touch one person, that one person touches somebody else, and that person touches somebody else.
Maybe.
And I think, and I don't think.
Maybe.
Sometimes I think you guys sell yourself short.
Oh, no. One thing we don't do is sell ourselves short. Believe me, that's what we don't do.
You're more powerful than you think.
I got five people riding with me, three youths and old bones. So we almost to the million, man. You know what I'm talking about?
Hey, man.
Hey.
A million.
Adam, if we thought ourselves short, we would have given this up a long time ago. You know, now we have our own, you know, clashes, our own conflicts, our own struggles, our own doubts, our own, you know, our own disappointments. But we also have our own beliefs, Will and I. And our belief is that, you know, the greenhouse effect is a worthy pursuit. And the greenhouse effect is a worthwhile brand. The only thing that we're challenged with is finding a bigger audience. And the only way we're going to find a bigger audience is having a bigger outlet. And the only way we're going to find a bigger outlet is finding a way to pursue it. And, you know, that's what we deal with, and that's what we've dealt with for the past, what has it been now, 2.5 years, Will? I don't even know. But I know you've been doing it since Skippy was a puppy.
Yeah.
But as far as what we've done, and Adam and Jay Pastor and Ray and my sister Brenda, you know, I mean, you are the ones, you know, y'all are the ones who give us the faith and the willingness and the strength and the motivation to, you know, to keep pursuing our own aspirations. You know, we don't approach this like a hobby. You know, we approach it like a calling.
You know? We got to throw
and,
Sue in there too. But absolutely.
And Sue, yeah. Oh, and there's other names too. I mean, you know, like. And there's always a risk of leaving people out. But speaking to those who are right here present right now, you know, you are the ones who give us inspiration. You know, Jay Pastor prays over us every morning.
Yeah, amen.
And it's more than, you know, Lord, help these brothers out.
Lord, please let the mic work. Please let the sound be good.
All that is necessary, man. So we ain't got but 2 minutes, man. What are we gonna do?
Yeah, you know,
you guys have a great night. Love you guys. Great show.
All right, love
you.
You
ain't got to hang up.
Here's your hat. What's your hurry?
Yeah, where's your hat? What's your hurry?
I know that you wanted to, you had a subject of climate change. Maybe we can get more into that Wednesday.
Well, we sure the hell ain't going to do it now.
We definitely ain't going to do it now. So we'll see what Wednesday.
And maybe we will, maybe we won't. You didn't even have to bring that up, man. You know, look here. This has been a great show, and I've loved every bit of it. I ain't even thinking about climate change right now. But I should be, though, because based on what I read, it's like the jig is up.
Well.
But go ahead, man.
For a black man your age, hey, it's all good.
For a black man my age, right up.
It's all good. It's all good. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show, where we try to provide an opportunity to exercise critical thinking, experience a renewed self-awareness, and maybe even a deeper connection to others and their experience, especially when we share interpretations and feelings. I'm Will. That's Bill over there.
I'm Bill.
Thanks again. Thanks again, Adam, JP, everybody else that took the time to spend an hour and a half with us. You could have been doing something else, but we appreciate your time. As always,
amen.
Be safe, be blessed, and most importantly, please be yourself, because, man, everybody else is taken. All right, Daddy-O.
Amen.
I'll holler at you later.
Amen.
Have a good night.
Amen.
Amen.
You too, Will. Love you, man.
Love you, too.
I'm feeling this way. I guess I should be crying. My heart just won't obey. If you stay, you'll be happy as I lie here on the rooftop in the rain.